south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, so once again, I'm going to try to finish off the topic of Ecuador. And this time, I'll try not to get hopelessly sidetracked, okay? Now, on the last show, I was sidetracked by talking about zoning laws, and I mentioned that the only real way to have control over the zoning in your neighborhood or where you locate your business is to be in a private gated community or subdivision that set up what you might call condominium-style rules and regulations for the subdivision. In fact, I've read some of these Latin subdivision rules and regulations, and they're pretty complete, as if they copied and translated the very same thing from a subdivision set of rules up in the States. Surprise, surprise, huh? So does that mean they have someone to enforce those regs like they would up in a high-rent development up in Cleveland? In other words, if it says you can't have livestock, can someone in the colony still have some chickens and goats and get away with it? Now, I have to warn you, no matter how nicely typed and official those regs look, nothing is 100% certain in Latin America. Even in the nicest, most high-end subdivisions, locals will somehow get in and hawk eggs and fruit, ice cream, and all kinds of things they might sell on the street. So, how do they get in? When the regs specifically exclude that kind of stuff? Well, this will be hard to believe, I know, but it's usually friends and relatives of the guards at the guard shack at the entrance, whose job it is to let people in and out with the right credentials. So when a 12-year-old indigenous kid knocks on your door trying to sell you some chocolate bars, when you ask him how the hell he got into your subdivision when it's prohibited, he'll just back away looking stupid, give you a shrug, and head back down the road. Now, maybe it's a gringo thing. You know, we're going to call him on that because it's in the regs, and when we got a copy of those regs before we moved in or started building, we took that document as the Bible for that subdivision. Details, details, huh? So chances are, most people in that colony think it's a good thing that they can buy chocolate bars or tortillas or eggs every day from a little guy knocking on their door like that. However, most gringos and expats don't like it when written rules are flaunted. Here's another example. Oftentimes, you'll be driving through what you think is a purely residential upscale community. I'm talking about a guarded community now with posted regulations. And you'll see that someone's turned their garage or their extra room, one that faces on the street side, into a very small hole-in-the-wall type business like a dog grooming place, a beauty parlor, or a pint-sized 7-Eleven. And you'll see that even though it says specifically in the condo or the subdivision rules that you can't do that. So even with very upscale residential subdivisions, the so-called condo or subdivision rules can be either very strictly or spottily adhered to like everything else in Latin America. For example, in Expat Eddie's subdivision, a very high-end one in Salvador, in the bylaws it says you cannot cut down any tree on your property without circulating a petition to that effect and having it discussed as a point of order at the next condo meeting. And in fact, he did show me such a petition. It was a letter from a lady that wanted to have a tree removed next to her driveway because she knew sooner or later in the next big storm it was liable to fall on her house. So in his gated subdivision, rules are strict and they're enforced. And how are they enforced? Well, Eddie says no one really has had to enforce them yet, and he's been there a couple of years. But he's been told it would be like not paying your monthly maintenance fee. They'd just threaten to cut your water off until you complied. And they can do that because it's on a private well. However, like Expat Eddie said, in the subdivision right next door to his, an equally wealthy one, seems like every weekend, especially on Sundays, he hears chainsaws buzzing all the time. And that's because, like he says, on Sundays, nearly half the guards that walk the place get the day off, and the offices of the management company that runs the place is closed. Meaning, no one to complain to and no one to call. Not till Monday morning, anyway, and by that time, well, it's after the fact and the dirty deeds have been done. Oh, and another thing, and this'll crack you up. even in the wealthiest Latin-gated subdivisions, there are a lot of deadbeat owners. Oh, they have slick late-model SUVs and nice gardens and a bodyguard or two. Yet, apparently, quite a few of them are very bad with money, living like so many Americans from day to day or week to week, unable to pay a lot of their bills on time, but still putting up a big-time front. After all, with Latins, especially the wealthy ones, it's all about the show, right? You've heard me say that before. Anyway, it seems like every time I drive into one of these high-end copies of gringo subdivisions, there's a sign or a bulletin board right as you get inside the colony, and that's what they call subdivisions down here, colonies or colonias in Spanish. I know, it brings to mind beehives and wasp nests and such, but that's what they call them. Anyway, there'll always be a sign or a bulletin board saying something like this. The following people have not paid their water bill or maintenance fee for 3 months, and if they don't pay by the end of the month, they'll have their water cut off. And believe me, that's when you get to see who the deadbeats in that colony really are, because from what I can tell, the same names seem to show up all the time. Just the other day, I was in one of those high-end subdivisions in Guatemala, and I got to see the full names of the 10 biggest deadbeats in that colony of about, oh, I'd say 70 houses. Yep, they hadn't paid their water bill or maintenance fee in over 3 months. Yet, if you drive through, you'd see by all other measures, they were upper middle class, if not wealthy Latins for sure, with some of the houses having two or three Mercedeses or BMWs in the driveway. All late model ones, too. Wait a minute, is Mercedeses the plural of Mercedes? Well, if it isn't, it is now. Anyway, I doubt if you could ever get away with posting the names of deadbeats in your Seattle subdivision. The condo committee would be looking at multiple defamation lawsuits there, I bet. Which does beg the question if Latins, especially upper middle class and wealthy Latins, are so into the show and so into impressing people, why would they ever risk to have their good name on that deadbeat board for everyone to see? Now, that's an easy one to answer. You know, for us up in the States, there are certain things that are quite embarrassing. Like, for example, being called a deadbeat like that or having your credit cards denied in front of people, whether it's Sears, the IHOP, or Hooters. You know what I mean. But this is Latin America, and that stuff happens so often that it doesn't tarnish anyone's character or standing, since it happens to so many people in all walks of life on a fairly regular basis. And like Expat Eddie says, if they do cut off your water or your electric, the reconnection fees are only about $5 or $10. Now, I don't know what the reconnection fees are up in the States, but I assure you, they're not that cheap. Anyway, speaking of zoning, what happens out in the countryside? Way out in the boonies, in the wide open spaces. Well, a lot of long-term expats, the ones that want to live like country squires, have discovered that if they want to live out in the countryside and maintain a million-dollar view, they have to make sure that that beautiful view they're looking at is on a steep incline or steep drop-off cliff, valley, or canyon, so that the landowner or farmer who owns that beautiful view you're looking at doesn't sell it off for cheap cookie-cutter housing. Meaning, your nice view should be towards a steep enough incline or drop that no one with any brains would ever think to build there. Which means if it's a nice but empty neighborhood, there still is a chance that you just might eventually be looking into the back window of a crooked, thieving, scumbag politician or two. After all, they love being around gringos, and they will build on a very steep incline or drop-off, being that politicians are vastly over-endowed with shit for brains. And of course, they copy everything gringo at all costs. Meaning, if gringos have picked a location as the new place to be, some of those asswipes will end up in your neighborhood. And that's really no joke. In fact, you know that good old Pan-American highway that goes from Alaska all the way down through Mexico and Central America where it ends up in Panama? Well, you probably studied it in 7th grade geography class, though I'm sure most of you have never been on it. Well, I have, hundreds if not thousands of times, and I can tell you this. A good part of it is quite residential, and it passes through many gouges and gorges and mountain passes and such. Some of it's beautifully paved and well done, 4, 5, even 6 lanes, and in other parts, it's not fit for man nor beast, I'll tell you that. If you get on that thing and drive north or south for an hour or so, I guarantee you'll see at least a dozen or so expensive houses that seem to be somehow defying gravity. That is, they're high up in the air overlooking the Pan American Highway, perched on impossibly steep cliffs, in a known mudslide and earthquake zone. And you wonder what kind of an idiot architect or owner would even think to put a place up there. Not to mention, how'd they get permission from the municipality to even start construction? That said, at least once a year during the heavy rainy season, a few million-dollar mansions take a tumble. And thankfully, they're far enough away from the Pan American Highway itself that they don't cause a problem with the traffic. Except for, of course, the inevitable gaper's block, which can and does back up traffic for a couple of miles. I'm telling you, it really is a sight to see. In fact, I'm a pretty good gaper myself. Not to mention, up and down the Pan American Highway during the rainy season, you'll see mud and rock slides that reach right up to the highway, often wiping out at least one lane for a day or so. And how often does that happen? Well, every day during the rainy season. Sometimes dozens and dozens of them in a single day, because that road is very long. And it winds through dozens, if not hundreds, of mountains and valleys. So as far as landslides, as a point of fact, I think I've seen as many as 4 of them in one day myself. And that on a stretch of only about 50 kilometers, which is about 35 miles. And yes, each one of those did block at least a lane of traffic, so imagine the bottlenecks that day. So why am I talking about the Pan American Highway in particular? Well, because it's the most well-traveled road in all of Latin America. By far the most well-traveled road. In fact, it's one of the top 10 most traveled roads in the whole world. So if you're going to drive down anywhere in Central America at least, or if you end up on vacation renting a car down here, at one point or other, you're going to cross or be on the Pan American Highway. So knowing about those landslides and the poor engineering in general, when you're driving on it, should you be worried? Only about the bottlenecks and the traffic jams. Sure, the landslides can be very big, and sometimes they'll block off the whole road for a couple of hours, but I've never met anyone in my 20-something years down here who's ever had any problems getting through eventually. And yes, those crazy chicken bus drivers wreck their buses on the thing all the time. In fact, every couple of months, especially in the rainy season, one of them goes off a bridge or off an embankment and ends up rolling the thing and killing everyone on board. Par for the course down here. And that's another reason why a chicken bus driver has the most dangerous profession in all of Latin America. Now, don't laugh. Look it up. You'll see I'm right. So again, avoid chicken buses. Now, of course, it's not just the rich who build their houses on sides of mountains. In fact, they're the exception, since thousands and thousands of miserably poor Latin Americans build their houses, actually tin-roofed makeshift huts, on the sides of mountains and cliffs as untitled squatters, making up those gigantic slums called favelas or asentamientos. So they squat on land that has no other use. You can't even grow any crops there. It's way too steep. Though they don't have running water or sewage treatment, etc., even the government doesn't care. However, just like in California, there are very many stupid rich people who build on precarious sides of mountains and cliffs too. As long as you're king of the mountain and have a spectacular view, and there's no slums in the vicinity, eventually some rich guy puts his house there. In fact, right now, if you got on the Pan American Highway in Guatemala and started heading to Salvador, about an hour before you hit that border, you'll see on the right side of the road a house that's worth $1 million or so that's fallen right into the Pan American Highway. I mean, that thing tumbled right down the side of a cliff and ended up in the highway, the whole house. And you're talking maybe a 6,000 square foot house here. And since the rubble took out about a lane and a half, instead of bulldozing the rubble and the house and the side of the mountain that came down, road crews just repaved a chunk of the highway right around that rubble. And that's what you have to do now. You have to slow down and take that serpentine curve that they created, which is a big bother, especially at night. Because as usual, in Latin America, things are never properly marked at night. Yeah, like it's marked any better during the day. Which is why night driving is not recommended for the faint of heart. Now, while you're driving past that disaster, you can see at least 10 or 20 more sections of that mountain that are ready to give. And when they do, and it's a guarantee, they'll come down with the string of very expensive houses on the top of that ridge too. And you know what every gringo says who drives by and sees that? I mean, of course, after their eyes bug out and they gasp, "Holy f***, how'd they build that up there and who the hell would want to live in it?" In the end, all us gringos and expats think the same thing. Those idiots deserve exactly what they get. So, how does that stuff happen? And why isn't anyone doing anything about it? Least of all, the idiot owner who bought or built the place. Now, over the years, I've come in contact with a lot of Latin architects, and I've asked them about this. I say, how could one of you architect guys in good conscience build in a spot like that when you know eventually it's going to come down? And you know what? I hear the same story. They say, without embarrassment, owners just love to show off a massive house on top of a mountain where everyone can see. So their instructions to the architect are always the same. Whatever it costs to shore up the foundation, just bring in the concrete and I got the money. And believe me, there's no architect that's going to turn down an offer like that. Sound familiar? Just like in California, right? And how do they get the plans past the building inspectors and the municipality where you have to register those plans? Easy, you just walk in and pay the fee because no one checks anything. All they care about is taking a copy of your plans and you paying the fee, $1,000 or whatever. Then they stamp it and you do pretty much anything you want, except if you live in one of those gated communities that has its own zoning laws. Then you have to submit those plans to the development committee before you can start building. But you knew that already if you've been listening to my show for any length of time. The fact is, I've built or have been involved in building at least 13 structures down here, houses and offices and such. And never once did a building inspector actually ever come out and check anything. Though I have had a few come out to have a cup of coffee with me, though they never actually took out a tape measure and checked anything. It's just that when you're off the gringo tourist trail, everybody's interested in that gringo. It's that gringo advantage again, or disadvantage in this case, however you want to look at it. So I've been through that process more than 13 times, and in 4 or 5 different Latin countries now, not just one. Oh, and by the way, architects have a fallback position when their clients want to build on precarious pieces of land. They tell the client that he or she should buy insurance for that. Earthquake and landslide insurance, flood insurance, etc. And they always advise their client in writing that they should get it. But guess what, as most architects will tell you, the average person with a substandard cookie-cutter middle-class house, middle-class Latin style that is, never bothers to get any kind of homeowners or umbrella insurance policy at all. And people with million-dollar or multi-million-dollar houses perched on the side of mountains or cliffs, they don't either. Remember, this is Latin America where insurance is a relatively new concept. And get this, since the average Latin or even the upper class Latins build with their own cash, basically by fits and starts, which is, by the way, why you see so many half-built buildings that seem to be abandoned. Well, some of them are, but most of them aren't. They're just sitting there waiting for the owner to come up with some more cash to hire the contractors again. That means, until very recently, no homeowners' loans were available at all. So, what does that mean to the Latin person in regards to homeowner insurance? Well, he's just never exposed to it. Thus, he thinks it's money in the toilet, and he doesn't have a need. He knows his friends and family who own houses don't have it. No one ever brings it up. And it's not marketed in the papers or on TV, not to mention since most people pay cash. There is no home closing powwow where you sit around with your banker and your insurance guy, etc. You write out 1,000,000 checks and you get State Farm or Allstate or the Blowtorch Brothers to insure your house. There's just no tradition of that happening down here. Thus, the concept of having specifically homeowners insurance is not even on the radar at all. Down here, when you mention the word insurance to people, they think car insurance. That's it. In fact, the insurance coverage statistics for Latin America are pretty startling. Believe me, they don't have a first worlder's paranoia of not being covered, or in insurance jargon, going naked. Only about 5% of Latin Americans have insurance on anything at all. And it's not that the 5% that have it are so conscientious either. It's just that if you're lucky enough to qualify for a car loan, you'll be forced into taking it until you've paid it down. So, guess what? This might not come as a surprise to you, but It turns out that us gringos and expats, we're the ones, little by little, kind of lighting the fire under the butts of the insurance companies, so to speak. Pun intended. Now, in talking about insurance, one thing that expat Eddie said that I never thought of before, he said, you know, because almost no one carries insurance down here, even businesses, when a building burns down, a first worlder's mind right away thinks, for a minute anyway, that it might have been a torch job for the insurance money. Well, you know, down here, that's not on the radar. When you see a building burn down, the first thing you think is playing with matches, bad wiring, or maybe a torch job, but for revenge, not the insurance money, because there ain't any. So, like I said, us gringos have kind of introduced the insurance mentality, especially on the gringo tourist trail. We seem to be the insurance broker's new and best clients, since we all carry around that insurance policy guilt with us. You know, gotta have insurance on everything, right? Or you just don't sleep well at night. So if you still feel that way when you come down here, lucky for you, insurance, like everything else, is still at third world pricing. Now, you know, I often talk about how gringos have pretty much ruined Costa Rica. Not only are prices first world and then some, but the people are jaded now, looking at us gringos not as people, but as dollar signs. In fact, lately I've been speaking to some people who've been in and out of Costa Rica and some gringos that have been living there a long, long time. Lately, they say they no longer feel welcome at all in the country. There's an underlying current of gringo go home. Now, a lot of the locals are thinking, this is our country, and now that you've built it into a first world one for us, we can handle it and we want it back. Actually, that's not true. They think they're first world now, but they're not. If you've ever been there, you'd know what I'm talking about. They're just no longer a dirt poor banana republic like they were back in the 50s and 60s. So now, so many of them are thinking, we can handle things, we've got it down. Time for us to take our country back. You showed us how to do it. Thanks, but no thanks, so if you don't mind, just get the hell out. Now, I started hearing those rumors 2 or 3 years ago, but just lately, over there it seems like it's a real problem. In fact, I've heard that in some areas, Costa Ricans are becoming verbally hostile to gringos. And it's not just a rumor either. There's even been local newspaper op-ed pieces and editorials about it. In fact, every single person I know, every expat living in Costa Rica, has told me that very same story. Anti-gringo hostility is really there, or bubbling under the surface anyway. That said, obviously you're a pretty clueless gringo if you pick Costa Rica to live or do business in. Which begs the question, if Ecuador is the next Costa Rica, and some people say it is, including many retirement rags and international living, of course. So in Ecuador, can you expect to see some of that gringo go-home attitude bubbling up too? Well, here's something for you. As one long-term gringo living in Ecuador reports, he says, we're seeing some conflicts between locals and a growing number of arrogant, ignorant, and loud expats who do not approve of life in Ecuador as they see it. Now, he says, as increasing numbers of expats seek to isolate themselves in walled-off communities and high-rises, whether for security or just to stick with fellow expats who speak English, local Ecuadorians feel offended and make fun of certain areas by referring to them as gringolandias, a term that foreign residents often repeat without realizing it's a local sarcasm and an insult. Again, that's gringolandia, meaning, of course, gringoland. He says many times he's witnessed foreigners yelling at government officials, bank tellers, and waiters, etc., because they're too slow or because they don't speak enough English. And all that does, he says, is instigate a kind of ugly American backlash that can be seen more and more in some areas, especially in the bigger cities like Cuenca. Now, he goes on to say that the worst offenders are those gringos who believe everything they've read or heard from individuals and groups who came down for the main reason that they've heard that things are tremendously cheaper than living up in the States. The problem is, they really don't expect other things to be much different. They want to live like they always have, only much cheaper. You get enough gringos together, he says, especially when they're all living in little gringo subdivisions. They no longer see themselves as guests in someone else's country. Oh, they get their things cheaper, all right. But the slow-moving locals, whether they're working at the bank or with the government, don't snap to it like first-world foreigners are used to. Gringos and expats soon learn that they don't get their coffee, tea, and garlic bread in 2 seconds flat, like they did at the Olive Garden up in Cleveland. Well, he didn't exactly say Cleveland, I did, of course. Anyway, he says, so then who do these new gringo visitors take their frustrations out on? Not other gringos who they can share their bad experiences with over coffee, but at Ecuadorian cab drivers and bank tellers, etc. So in that sense, yes, it is the next Costa Rica. So finally on this Ecuador thing, I'd like to read you excerpts and paraphrase a recent email that I received from one of my new friends who just happens to be one of my expat wisdom seminar alumnus. He's been hanging around in Central America quite a bit, but has also done some time in Ecuador. No, not in an Ecuadorian slammer. I'm talking about with boots on the ground there. And let's keep this one anonymous, because I'm sure to get some email backlash on this one, and you'll see why. Anyway, here goes. Johnny, you know, I actually like Ecuador a lot, but like everywhere, it's got its problems. Like any Latin country, if you stay on the tourist trail, you'll run into gringoed out locals. If you want to see a place that's really been gringoed out over the last 20 years, check out Thailand. It seems to me like more than in some other countries and places, the gringos tend to congregate in little enclaves. International living and similar rags are probably responsible for that, since an inordinate number of these clueless but affluent gringos who come down seem to retire and buy real estate here. Now, a whole lot of gringos seem to have brought along with them that first world, quote, service expectation that basically defines the ugly American. That expectation doesn't play real well with some of the upper class, white-skinned, tall Spaniard-type Ecuadorians who deal with the public a lot. The gringo public, that is. You do catch scowls and dark looks from people like tour guides and travel agency clerks when somebody in your group starts getting to be a little bit of a pain in the ass. They've obviously put up with all the demanding gringos they care to have at this point. Funny thing is, none of the other gringos in the group seem to pick up on that except me. Oops, sorry about that. We're at the end of the show again, so more of that letter next time. You won't want to miss this.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.